You're listening to the Half and Half Podcast. Each week, we bring you a half his and half her point of view on important topics such as mental health, masculine and feminine dynamics, relationships, health, and more. So grab yourself a cup of coffee and join us in the space between his and her perspectives, where we find middle ground. This is the Half and Half Podcast. And now, here's your hosts, Amanda and Nick.
Hello, hello.
What's up, babe?
Welcome back to the Half and Half Podcast. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Nick. And this is the first episode of 2020.
2020, baby.
It's exciting.
2020 vision.
Yeah, it's going to be a big year.
You think?
I think so.
Feels good. 2020 feels symmetrical, you know?
It does. It feels like a fresh start.
Totally.
New decade, new year.
So, first of all, guys, we have big news. We have totally upgraded our coffee content. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got some good coffee gear for Christmas from Amanda and my dad. And it's...
I told his dad what to get. Yeah, so it's, really.
Yeah, we're stepping up our coffee game.
Yeah, now, next thing you know, we're like hand grinding things, like taking a good...
Measuring.
Self. We've got a scale.
Yeah,
new kettle. Things.
Yeah, it's great.
A kettle, electric. We're doing... We got a new pour over.
We're watching YouTube videos on how to do it.
Yeah, pretty much my brother has been like the... leading guide, the mm-hmm. Yoda, I would say, of the coffee world. Your friend Chris is also pretty like coffee oriented.
Mm-hmm. So what are you drinking?
I today have Kicking Horse Swiss Water processed, of course, decaf, and we hand ground it, baby. Mm-hmm. And it's done in the pour over, and I added some oat milk. Pretty plain today.
Yeah,
just regs.
And I am drinking the Diesel Roast from Iconic Coffee Roasters, which I got in Santa Fe on a recent Christmas trip. And it's delicious.
Awesome.
Really like it. And I put a little bit of butter in there, too.
Butter?
Yeah. It's my thing. I think I did it's on the last
thing.
One, too.
That's
didn't
your
I?
Thing?
Yeah, that's what I always say.
Hi, I'm Amanda. Yeah. It's nice to meet you.
Yeah, good to meet you.
We literally just shook hands. I wish mm-hmm. you guys could see him right now because he's got these new glasses he's wearing.
They're amazing.
They're like half sunglasses, half regular.
Yeah. I'll put them in the show notes.
You're going to put them in the show notes?
Yeah.
What movie did you see these on?
The Irishman. It's this is so lame. It's the glasses that Joe Pesci wears in it, and he looks really badass. So yeah. I went out and found him.
Well, you look awesome.
I do look awesome. I feel cool. It's like one of those purchases where you like buy it, and for like the first couple of days, you're just walking a little taller.
Yeah, you got a little
swagger.
Dopamine hit off
yeah,
of
it. A little bit. A little bit.
Okay, so what are we going to be talking about today?
Well, given it's New Year's, or mm-hmm. just after New Year's, huge, I guess, drinking holiday, we want to talk about something that is near and dear to both of us.
Yeah.
Alcohol.
Yep, it all started out from driving home today, seeing a, what are those things called?
It's like a road sign.
Yeah, and they love to put like messages in there, like...
Yeah, they try and get like snarky with it, and it was...
what was today's? It said, the best New Year's resolution, don't DUI.
It was like the best present. Wasn't it the best present you can give?
Yeah, that was yeah. the Christmas one, but
okay.
today was the best New Year's resolution, don't DUI.
Yeah.
And I laughed when I saw it because, for one, New Year's resolutions, I mean, who really sticks with those?
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I'm more of a New Year's goals kind of girl, but... Anybody who's getting DUIs on the regs probably
right.
is past the point where they can just resolve it away. Like, that's it. That's
right.
the ticket. That sign changed
yeah.
it for me.
I don't think the sign really moves the needle.
I'm not going to do it anymore.
Yeah.
My New Year's resolution. But seriously, alcohol is an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that this is like a sensitive topic because people love their wine. We live in freaking...
Yeah.
wine country
yeah.
in California.
Central Coast.
And, you know, people get defensive about it. They feel judged
mm-hmm.
About it. But I think that happens on both sides, wouldn't you say, sweetheart, if people are sober as well?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I am sober, and something I've learned over the past few months is that when you talk to someone who's not and who is either a regular drinker or a problem drinker or, you know, one glass a week, no matter what, there's always this kind of, I don't know, like stickiness to that conversation where I feel awkward almost saying that I don't drink, and mm-hmm. I feel like they feel awkward drinking. So I just want to say before doing this podcast that minus the health benefits and all of that, like I used to love drinking. Like I really liked alcohol, and I just, it didn't work for me anymore. But, you know, when I was younger in my 20s, it led to a lot of good times, and not necessarily like being blacked out drunk or anything, but having a nice glass of wine for dinner, having a good like scotch while watching Mad Men. I used to love doing that. So this is more looking at alcohol, how it's affected us, how it's affected me, Amanda, and then also just the health consequences to drinking, especially stuff that people may not know, because there's a lot of misinformation. Glass of wine a day is good for your heart. You hear that all the time. Mm-hmm. And just, I don't know.
So I think the best place to start is, you know, obviously, yeah, we want to preface it that there's no judgment we have on anybody or anything, but more just wanting to enlighten you. Obviously, we want to bring information, and then we want to bring heartfelt stories of our lives and impact other people with those. So that's our goal, really. But let's talk about some facts about alcohol. So Nick, you mm-hmm. are currently studying at City College.
Yeah.
For, can you fill us
yeah,
in?
Yeah, I'm working on a CADEX certification, which is a, it's basically a license to be a chemical dependency counselor. And I'm really learning it with the goal of opening a treatment center someday. That's my, you know, 5 to 10 year plan. But I'm also like very interested in the science behind it, the socioeconomic impacts, just everything surrounding substance abuse, alcohol, addiction. And one of the biggest things is alcohol, obviously.
An epidemic in this yeah. country, in other countries as well, but specifically.
It's weird. It's not like alcohol, for whatever reason, always seems to get a pass in terms of.
Interesting.
You know, it's like. I was reading something about vaping the other day, yeah. and it was like, I think there's been 60 people that have died so far in vaping, and they're calling that an epidemic. Like, you know, Congress is going to ring in, there's going to be bans, and this is no, you know, I'm not saying vaping is good or bad, but I mean, alcohol probably kills, you know, 3 or 4 times out a day. And it's just, it gets the pass. And
why do you think that is?
History, I just think it's just been there forever. I think the majority of people like alcohol. There's a lot of money in alcohol, in advertising and all of that. It's just, yeah, it's ever since Prohibition, it's been with us. So
most people are, I think, looking for an escape, right? With alcohol.
Yeah.
I mean, if we get into the deeper stuff. So do you want to talk about some facts first, just health-wise, and then we
yeah.
can talk about the deeper aspects of it? Okay. So just also from perspective, alcohol affects men and women differently. There's some things like across the board, but there's some things with women specifically that are a little bit more intense. So first of all, any sort of consumption of alcohol on a regular basis, whether that is like moderate use or excessive use, affects hormone levels and reproductive function, typically, specifically, actually, estrogen. So the reason for that is because, you know, they've done quite a few studies that have, like, investigates the effects of moderate alcohol consumption, and it both in pre and postmenopausal women. And it was concluded that alcohol kind of induces a rise in natural or synthetic estrogen levels in women. And it also increases the rate of aromatization of testosterone and a decreased rate of oxidation of estrogen. It also has been linked to decreased progesterone in women. And, you know, that's a lot of gibberish to say. It basically increases your estrogen level by a certain percentage. It doubles it than what you already have in your body. And for a lot of women who come to me, they're having issues with estrogen. What does that look like? They've got heavy periods. They've got PMS. They've got fibroids. They've got cysts. They've got growths. Estrogen kind of promotes mm-hmm. growth in the body. And breast cancer, because estrogen flows down different pathways. And if it flows down a certain pathway, the 4-OH pathway, which alcohol increases, then you have more tendency to develop breast cancer. So this is like, you know, pretty serious. And they did some data from 53 studies, and they found that for each alcoholic drink consumed per day, the breast cancer risk is increased by 7%.
Oh.
So women who had 2 to 3 drinks per day had a 20% higher chance of breast cancer compared to women who didn't drink alcohol at all. So that's not really that much, you know, like not everybody drinks 2 to 3 per day. But right. if you're doing a glass of wine every night, mm-hmm. that's going to add up as well. So, yeah, and that's a huge issue for women. So unfortunately, that's a problem. But guess what? It also affects men mm-hmm. and their testosterone levels. So you guys like don't
can't wait to hear this.
That.
So excessive alcohol consumption are also associated with decreased testosterone levels. And, you know, do you remember when we first met? You were like super obsessed with your tea.
Yeah, I was really worried that my tea levels were off from drinking too much. We had met right after I had some pretty hard days with drinking. And you had mentioned that was one of the things. And I had never thought that alcohol affects testosterone
right.
at all.
He really wanted to make sure his testosterone, we were just friends, and he was really trying to make sure his testosterone was in the right place. And so the way that works is the alcohol that you ingest releases certain endorphins. And obviously those endorphins feel really great in the moment. They are pleasant and relaxing, but they interfere with testosterone synthesis. And they also increase cortisol, which I know a lot of people know mm-hmm. causes belly fat, etc. But cortisol also decreases testosterone synthesis. So, and it also increases the conversion of testosterone to estrogen, even for males. So you got some man boobs, guys.
Yeah, stop drinking.
And also beer is really highly estrogenic.
Yeah.
Like the hops and the things in beer, it's definitely more estrogenic. But this happens with any alcohol as well. So it's important to understand that, you know, these things are affecting your hormones, both for men and women. But I don't think a lot of people realize that. I think having these kind of facts kind of gives you more information to like choose, like, do I really want to do this mm-hmm. right now? The other thing is that it affects men and women a little bit differently in some ways. And one of the reasons is body mass, like smaller mass. So if a woman and a man drink the same amount of alcohol, a woman's blood alcohol level will almost always be higher than the man's. And there's several reasons for this. One, like I just said, smaller mass. So there's less mass for a woman to kind of metabolize mm-hmm. and carry that alcohol. And alcohol is more concentrated in women because alcohol is held in the body in water and not in body fat. And women generally have higher percentage of body fat than men, so they have less body water. So it's going to be right. more concentrated in them. And also, there's several studies that kind of link to women not being able to break down alcohol as much in their digestive system. So it hits the bloodstream a little harder and faster. So
yeah.
as much as we want to be the same, women are not created equally.
Yeah, it's rough for you guys. So from everything you researched, were there any, and this is weird to ask, like positive benefits to either men or women on the hormonal level from consuming alcohol?
No.
Nothing?
No.
Wow.
I mean, wasn't you who called me after class one night and you were like, what did you say? What was the fact?
Alcohol hits every organ in the body. It affects every organ in the body, which I was like, whoa. Because you hear like the liver, you know, people who drink a lot, their skin gets messed up, but yeah, it hits everything.
Right.
Yeah.
So you can't just drink it and think, oh, it's just going to hit my liver.
Yeah, my liver is going to get cooked. But yeah, it hits
everything. So it goes through your entire body.
Yeah, because it gets absorbed into the blood and yeah, it just wrecks you.
Yeah. And I mean, okay, if that's not enough for you guys, if health information, well, we have some info in the heart as well that I'll get into, but it definitely affects appearance. Mm-hmm. So if you're vain and you just want to look good, alcohol is not the way to go. One of the reasons why is because it interferes with normal sleep processes big time.
Right? Yeah. So yeah, with alcohol, your body takes a long time to digest it, break it down. I think it's about an hour per drink or so. And it's, you know, it mm-hmm. breaks down into pure sugar. So when people, you know, drink a lot at night and then lay down to go to bed, they may pass out initially because alcohol is a depressant and it like hits your GABA. So you're very relaxed. But then as your body is breaking it down and all that sugar is just like rushing in, you get jolted up in some cases.
Yeah. That, and, like, and I can speak to that
personally.
Up.
Yeah. Like I used to, you know, I'd fall asleep at, you know, 10 or 11, and I would just like dart up at like 2 or 3 in the morning, sweating, like tons of anxiety. And it was all because of drinking. And then usually once you're up from that, like you're not going back to bed.
Right.
And it's a rough cycle, like to get into that.
Yeah. Blood sugar is one of the main reasons why people have insomnia and struggle mm-hmm. with it. And around that time, the liver is doing a lot of work and dumping it. And so it can definitely cause you to wake up. And affects that blood sugar and that sleep. So obviously, if you're not sleeping, you look like crap. The other thing is it dehydrates you.
Yeah.
So for every glass you drink, you really should be drinking like 2 more glasses of water.
They would say like 1 and 1, mm-hmm. and you need more than that.
Definitely, yeah. Because it's not only like, you know, you need your normal ratio of, mm-hmm. of water, which you pretty much need half of your body weight in ounces a day.
Right.
So you need that plus whatever you're drinking in alcohol that's dehydrating.
Yeah. And usually people are drinking, you get sweaty. You know, if you're really drinking, just losing a lot of water.
Plus it leads to like the munchies. I feel like mm-hmm. you're like more inhibitions are down. So you're like, let's get a pizza.
Yeah, you eat like crap.
Yeah, and you're eating poorly. And then it also can keep you from absorbing vitamins and minerals mm-hmm. In your gut. And that's a huge factor as well. So yeah, if you want to look good, definitely reducing alcohol. It reduces inflammation. People lose a lot of like puffiness look, I think, mm-hmm. and like under the eyes, that tired look yeah. when they stop drinking. So it affects appearance a lot. And if, you know, to really kind of get your attention, that regularly drinking over a long period of time can increase your risk of developing heart disease. And that's because it can increase your blood pressure. Especially when you drink excessive amounts, obviously it causes a raised blood pressure, which is one of like the most important risk factors for having a heart attack or stroke. And weight gain obviously can put pressure on your heart and cause that issue too, which can come from excessive drinking. And it also weakens the heart muscle, which means the heart can't even pump blood as efficiently as possible. And that's a serious issue. But there's something I found really interesting. It's called the holiday heart syndrome. It's misleading because it's not like a
good thing.
Like, yay, happy holiday heart syndrome. It's actually connected to obviously the holiday time. And it is the fact that people could feel like they're having a heart attack or that sort of pain in the center of their chest. And it gets its name because cases tend to increase around the holiday times after weekends and holidays and those times when people tend to drink more, and usually can come on after a period of heavy drinking. When you have like, you know, 15 units or more in a 24-hour period and your heart starts to beat irregular, making you feel really breathless and your blood pressure changes and again, risk of heart attack and sudden death. So,
dun, dun, dun.
Right. And I think it can happen. Have you ever had a time, like I know for me, I don't really drink very much at all. Mm-hmm. If I do have some, I just don't feel good. And yeah. I notice that like people's tolerance levels change, right? So like they could get used to it. And then if they clean up their diet, their liver, it hits them harder. They can't do it as much. What do you know what causes that?
I don't know what causes it, but I know it's super common. It seems like that is the case with a lot of things that are bad for us. Uh-huh. I remember your like first cup of coffee, you know, mm-hmm. you probably didn't like it.
Right.
You know, and then you drink it over and over and you just get used to it.
Right.
I think the same thing is true with people that smoke cigarettes, people that drink. I mean, I know that the tolerance that you're talking about, it kind of stays with you. Like people I know that have abstained for a little while and then went back to drinking, mm-hmm. you would think they're starting fresh, but they go right back to the same amount of alcohol, like very, very quickly. And, you know, again, I'm not sure what that is, but, you know, it's your body getting used to, you know,
it's compensating.
It.
Yeah, it's compensating for it because the body always wants to move towards health and mm-hmm. surviving, taking care of that's its job. I kind of gave this illustration once. Well, I've done it more than once with my clients of like same thing with eating healthy food, because they'll be like, you know, after they do
a cleanse with me or like an elimination diet or whatever, we clean everything up, and then they go back and try to have dairy or gluten or whatever, they'll be like, why am I reacting now when I wasn't reacting before? And I always share this illustration of, or example, metaphor, whatever you want to call it, of like a smoker. You know, you're right, when they have their first cigarette, they're probably going to have a reaction. Mm-hmm. But if they continue to smoke every day for the next 10 years, those reactions are going to decrease. It doesn't mean that the damage isn't happening. If they quit, their body starts to heal pretty fast. The lungs do a lot of work to heal things up. And if you reintroduce that cigarette again, they're probably going to have a reaction again. And so the same thing happens with food or anything that your body compensates for. You maybe just didn't know. You maybe didn't know, recognize the inflammation or the allergic response or anything, because you're kind of just, now you have a contrast of like what wellness feels like.
Yeah.
So I think it's the same with alcohol. Do you have anything else you want to add?
In terms of that, no.
Okay.
So, a lot of facts.
Yeah. Well, the other one I want to share is that a normal serving of alcohol is 5 ounces, like a glass of wine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's not even like a whole cup.
Yeah.
And if you think of like how much you're getting at a restaurant, it's like way more than that. Mm-hmm. And like that's one, like you're supposed to have one of those and then you're done.
Yeah.
Which most people don't do.
Yeah.
I would say.
Even if they are having one, you know, quote unquote cup, it's more than the recommended serving size.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that can definitely all add up. Well, let's talk a little bit about the emotional component with alcohol. Like, what do you think, what have you learned in your journey and the effects of it in your life and how you've come to where you're at?
Yeah. Well, I think there's a couple different like kind of drinkers. There's this social drinker, you know, you're in college, and you, I think you are drinking at that point for the fun of it. You know, I don't think you're purely trying to escape. You know, there's probably, you're trying to cover up some social anxiety, maybe some nervousness, but for the most part, that's kind of a pure time in a drinker's life. I think it's later in life where drinking starts to get more problematic. And this is not to say that you can't be 16-year-old and have a drinking problem. This is just my personal experience. Alcohol becomes a band-aid for something, you know, whether you can't sleep unless you drink, whether you're too nervous to, you know, go on a date with someone, so you have to drink, whether you are horribly depressed and miserable, and the only way to kind of quell that voice is to drink and numb out. And, you know, those are common things with people that have, you know, drinking problems. You know, everyone thinks that, you know, the bum on the street or something like that, you know, he's just drinks because he drinks. Like, that guy probably had some like real pain in his life to the point where he would drink, and that was all he did, you know, to escape until it took everything from him. And, you know, I drank like that at one point, and I was lucky enough to have resources and to have people around me to pull myself out of it. But there's a lot of people who don't, and, you know, that's a scary thing. And this is a really long-winded answer to your question, but like I think the biggest reason people drink is to escape something. Depression, a bad breakup, you know, just work issues, loneliness. This world could be very difficult, and alcohol provides a way to turn that off for a little bit.
Yeah, there's a huge like sort of social norm of like moms and wine, right? Like, oh, yeah. Like get your wine.
Wine mom. And the Xanax.
Yeah, totally. And I know for me, I was a nanny for a while, full-time nanny, when I lived in Boston, and it was a pretty long day, and I had no kids of my own, but when I came home, I remember I just wanted to have a glass of wine, and that's when it was like probably a problem for me. I was like realizing how much I was looking forward to that at the end of the day. Like, that was the highlight of my life. Mm-hmm. Stopping at the gas station to get like barefoot red wine, drink it on my couch watching Gilmore Girls. What? Hashtag what? But like, I think that that's become a norm in society. Like, oh, mama, you just need a drink. And like, I get it that it can, it can be a great way to connect, like at the end of the day with your spouse, right? Having a glass of wine on the couch, or like you said, with a nice dinner. But so much is not about that. It's right. about chasing something they're never going to find. And then honestly, it was a depressed, like it always pulled me down. It exasperated whatever emotion I was feeling. It exasperated that. So if I was like in a happy
in the
good
moment
mood,
or like after,
no, like when I was drinking.
Okay.
Like, wouldn't you say, would you say
well,
that?
Well, mine was kind of like the opposite. Like, so when I drank, it would kind of turn everything off. But then when I was like sobering up after, that's when everything crashed for me, because my body got so dependent and used to it that the norm was to have alcohol. And without it, you know, I was anxious. I was miserable. I was depressed. And that's a scary place to be in, because then it's like you need this to function.
Yeah, that is, for me, I never got to that point. Obviously, I think it was more, if I was really sad, I would like drink and then I would be sadder. Like it never fixed my problem.
Yeah.
But.
And then you keep doing it, which is like the crazy thing. You know, you keep trying. And yeah.
So, I mean, huge congratulations for being sober.
Oh, thank you.
It's not easy.
No, I mean, it took a couple times.
Well, so much of this world socially revolves around it. Like, let's go out for drinks, dating. Mm-hmm. Let's meet for a drink, you know.
Yeah.
Like Thanksgiving, Christmas, mm-hmm. New Year's.
It's just everywhere. I went to CVS 2 days ago, and it's like you walk through a beer aisle in CVS. You know, it's just nuts.
That's not in Canada, by the way. Well, they have specific stores for it.
Yeah,
they segregate
it. It's like Utah, like a liquor store.
But in the U.S., you can get it at the gas station. You can get it at CVS. Mm-hmm. It is a huge part of our society. So how do you handle that as someone who's sober? You know, for me, I'm not at the point where in my life where it was ever a thing where I'm very neutral about alcohol. Like, I could take it or leave it.
Yeah.
And the only time I do like to have a glass of wine or something. If it's really, really good wine, I do better with wines that are from like Italy or France. Mm-hmm. They have less sulfites in them. They don't bother me as much as California wines.
What's a sulfite?
It's a preservative and something that they use in the wines that are more common here in the U.S. and in Canada as well. And it just can cause headaches and just I have a harder time with it.
Sure.
There's less of that in wines from overseas. So I think Australia has a lot of sulfites too. But anywhere from Italy,
Shiraz.
France. Yeah, so I'm like a fancy snob mm-hmm. person, I guess. I enjoy it if it's really good, if it's not going to make me feel bad.
Yeah.
But the majority of the time I take a sip of something and already I feel... Yeah. I feel off.
Didn't you have some on Christmas?
I did. I tried. Yeah. Yeah. And I ended up giving it to your mom because I couldn't. It just, you know, and it was good quality.
That was like one time where like I was wanting a glass of wine or something.
I was going to ask
just in those
you,
circumstances. Yeah. That's where it hits it for me.
When you're around people and it's like an enjoyable
like
event.
A nice dinner. Like we were having steaks and stuff.
Yeah.
And it was controlled. It wasn't like people getting messed up. It was, you know. Glass of wine for dinner. And luckily, remember that cool, the waiter brought me like, cause everyone ordered and then he was like, anything for you, sir. I was like, nah, I'm right. And then he came back with like a really cool mocktail and a champagne glass. That was delicious. I think you ordered one too.
Yeah. I ended up getting it and giving my wine to your mom.
Yeah. So those are situations where it's tough. Because like I said, like I have good memories of drinking and there are still times where, you know, nothing to act on, but it's like, yeah, that would be nice. I don't allow myself and I won't. But yeah, you know, I think anyone who's ever, you know, had a drinking problem and drank would be remiss if they said they never have those thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's like that type of thing, like a nice cup of coffee mm-hmm. in the morning, right? It's like, it's not the same if it's just like warmed up, like hot lemon water.
Yeah, I don't want to, what did you get, barefoot at the gas station? What did you say it was called?
That was back when I was like 22.
Like when I'm pumping gas, I'm like, yeah. But,
so let's talk about, for someone who is sober, what are some socially appropriate things to do, right? Because you say it's awkward. So if you're with people, well, is it easier for you if nobody drinks? Talk about that a little bit, like how you liked it to be handled.
Let me carry on. It's not awkward. I was making a point that sometimes there's conversations specifically around alcohol get awkward. Like if I'm in a group and people are drinking, that's fine. And, you know, I've yet to run into anyone who's given me crap for not drinking or choosing not to. I think anyone who does, especially a friend, like that's a crappy friend. If they were to, you know, but, yeah, I mean, at mixers or parties or whatever, I have my, you know, soda water, lime and bitters. I learned that from a bartender, and they said that's the go-to drink for people that have, you know, want to feel like they're drinking, I guess, which is weird in itself. Like, I want to feel like I'm drinking, you know, so I'm going to have this thing, but it's
but
just...
But people leave you alone if you have that in your hand because they're not like, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, if you're walking around a party with someone hosting and they're walking around pouring wine and you have a glass of water, you know, you may get pressed on that. You know, you want a glass, you know. Whereas if you're walking around with some soda water with a lime,
like a
vodka soda, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's one. I mean, mocktails are pretty good. Like, we've had some, you know, good ones. We had one today at that lunch spot.
I think it's becoming more common. I don't know if it's millennial movement or whatever. Sobriety is like cool.
Yeah.
Again, not that it really matters, but I think people are becoming more conscious of it. And there's even like
dry bars
popping up. Not the place I get my hair.
Not a blow dry bar. Those places serve alcohol now.
Right. But yeah, dry bars are more common. Craft mocktails are more common, that kind of option, which makes it nice because sometimes for me, it's all about the glass.
Yeah.
If I have like just sparkling water in a champagne glass, I feel fancy. And right. I just like, it's the feeling of it that I, you know, if you're with people socially, that feels nice, or just to feel like a little fancier. That's what I like, but it's not so much what's actually in the glass. So for you, is it, you know, do you like it when people get like, oh, we won't drink with Nick, or are you cool? Right.
No.
Talk about that.
Well, I want to circle back on one thing real quick before I forget. So it's interesting that those dry bars are kind of starting to take off, because like, if you think about what a bar is, like, what do you go to the bar for? It's the social aspect, and it's to escape that loneliness, which is some of the reason that people drink at home. It's to just escape the loneliness. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, this is probably a different podcast, but I mean, if you look at it like that, like people drinking at a bar, people going to a dry bar to hang out, it's the people want essentially the same thing. They want community. They want people. They want to maybe meet a partner. And I don't know. It just, like, what do you think of that? Like, it's just weird that, you know, you have to have alcohol. You don't have to, but like a lot of people need alcohol in that scenario just to make it work.
Well, it's because they're afraid of being themselves.
Yeah.
So that's a
but
deeper
it's all
issue.
All of them, you know, it's like if everyone just let that down.
Yeah, but that takes work, right?
Yeah.
It takes work. I mean, look at your own life. You've become way more comfortable with yourself.
Right.
Right?
5 years ago, I wouldn't be saying this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And same with me. And I never hid behind alcohol. I had my own other coping mechanisms. But it's all, we all deep down have a desire to be loved and to be accepted for who we are. And if we along the way at any point got a message that we were not able to do that, just being us, now we're looking for some sort of mask, right? And alcohol is a way to do that, because it lowers that, the mind monkey really that's in your head talking down you, saying what about this, what, you just kind of lose that and you're just kind of in the moment. So there's ways to do that that you can get to from doing inner work and becoming more comfortable with yourself so that you don't need it. And like, I think honestly it's like, I'm so comfortable with who I am, and even with dating it was like, you're either gonna like me or you're not, you know. And but a lot of people aren't in that place. They're in a different place. And so it is interesting with the dry bar situation, because I think it does provide an outlet for single people to go to meet other people, to have, like, sometimes you want to go somewhere where everybody knows your name.
Yeah.
Right?
And everyone will remember your name at the dry bar.
That was good, babe. Yeah. It's true. And I think that it provides that kind of social outlet. But I think it is a good idea to look in a little deeper as to why people feel like they need to hide behind it. And so back to my other question, what do you feel like when people are trying to hide that they're drinking around you, or are you more comfortable with people and they drink, like, obviously in that scenario with your family, you wanted to have some, so it would have been easier if nobody drank, or tell me.
No, I still would have actually wanted to drink in that situation.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's usually it's not the people around me drinking, it's like the situation. So mm-hmm. that situation was a time in the past that you would have when it. I drank, it wasn't terrible, I guess. It was nice, it was comforting. And yeah, I don't like it when my dad used to do this all the time. Like when I first got sober, like he would, like I would be at his house and like he'd have a glass of wine or a bottle of wine and he'd like, oh, here's Nick. Like, and he would like audibly say it and like move the stuff.
Yeah.
And
that probably made you feel worse.
Yeah. I mean, and he didn't know, like he thought he was helping out, but it just, I mean, that's like something that like, oh, like it puts the spotlight on you. It's like, oh, like what's going to happen if there's alcohol around Nick? Is he going to like lose his mind and like grab it and just start chugging it? Like, you know, it's like, right. What do you think's going to happen? But yeah, I mean, listen, like it, a lot of people don't, you know, they're trying to help and they're trying to, you know, make things easier on, mm-hmm. on you. And I don't know, for me, it's like, I'll just tell them, like, if someone just says like, oh my, like, is this okay? I'm like, yeah, dude, enjoy it. You know, a lot of times I'll say like, I wish I could have a beer right now. Like I miss it, you know, and it opens up a conversation. And I think, you know, that definitely took time. There was a period where I didn't want to be around it at all.
Sure.
When I first moved to Santa Barbara, like I was in my 30s hanging out with 30-year-olds and what do? They go out and drink. And so I missed out on a lot of that on purpose because, you know, new town, didn't know anyone, they're out drinking. Like that would be the perfect recipe for me to problem drink. You know, it wouldn't mm-hmm. be enjoyable or anything like that. It would just be like, this is trying, I'm trying to run away. I'm trying to hide the fact that I feel like an outsider here. I'm nervous. Like, what are people going to think of me?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it like you said, it took a long time to get to where I feel comfortable. And now that I do, I mean, it's nice. It's like freeing.
It's awesome.
So yeah.
So another question I have for mm-hmm. you is it easier having a partner who doesn't drink, obviously?
100%.
Okay,
if you were a drinker, there's no way this would work.
So tell me why. And what's different about that than being around other people? And they're drinking and it's fine.
Because when I drank with a partner on a vacation or something like that, like I never, there was two types of drinking in my life. There was the problematic drinking, when I'm drinking at 8 a.m. in the morning, like waiting for the liquor store to open. That's terrible. Like I don't want that. And then there was the mom having the glass of wine at night, like whatever that looked like for me. And if that's me and a partner out to dinner at night and sharing a bottle of wine, in my head, that's like a, I don't know, is that dopamine? Like it's just this response, like that was enjoyable, that was nice, I like that. And so I would have that feeling all the time with you. I think if we were cooking dinner together and you pour a glass of wine, it would be like, you know, whoa.
I want that.
And I think now, I think if we started our relationship like that, it wouldn't have worked. I think if you started drinking now, I'd be okay with it because like we have a relationship. I know how, you know, I know that I don't need that with you. You don't want that with me. So there's like this wall that's been built up around it to where I wouldn't even want to challenge that. It would be hard though. Like, yeah. You know, I don't know.
And then my other question is, how do people know the line? Where's the line between social, it's fine, and I've got a problem? Like, I think that's a really blurry line. So
yeah.
what do you think in your expertise of?
Definitely not expertise. Just again, speaking from personal experience and I guess speaking from like talking with people, I went to rehab. I don't know if we talked about it in the first one. And met a lot of people like me and in different walks of life who had problems. So I learned a lot from other people. Like that's been my education, has been my own personal experience, other people, and then, you know, the internet.
Well, and your classes.
And my classes, yeah. But I mean, that's, you know, like what you read earlier, those are facts. Like that's, you know, that's one thing. It's another to like, if you sit across from an alcoholic and you're just spouting off like, you know, your estrogen's through the work, you know, right, that's not going to connect with that person. So, and the work I want to do is in line with that. Yeah. I mean, the line is where I like anything. You need it. You feel like you need it. If you feel like you need anything and that you can't, function's a very strong word, but you, that life is less enjoyable without this thing in whatever that looks like. Yeah. My sleep is not as good unless I have two glasses of wine at night. Like that's, in my opinion, that's...
Or I can't have this conversation without
right. I can't go on this date, yeah. you know, unless I have an old fashioned while I'm sitting there or, you know, whatever. I can't go to family dinner unless we're all drinking. I can't hang out with my friends. I can't watch football without this. You know, it's, and a lot of people don't look at it like that. They don't like, they're like, oh, I'm just drinking with my friends on Sunday. And that's fine if that's true. But, you know, I had friends in LA that we would all say that, you know, I was pretty well aware that I had a problem. And a lot of these guys didn't think they were because their day to day was still very much on track, but not a Sunday went by that they didn't drink. And, you know, over the course of 5 years, like they drank every Sunday. And in my opinion, like that's probably a line that you got to look at.
Yeah.
Because yeah, I mean the next day you're not going to feel as good. You're not going to feel as on. Yeah. I mean the line is different for everyone, mm-hmm. but if I feel like if you truly look at your situation and you know, you feel like what you said where you're going home and the, you know, you're like, I can't wait to have that glass of wine. You know, how would it feel like if you didn't have that glass of wine, you know, try it for a day. And if that's really difficult for you and that, then that's a line, you know, yeah. that's when you got to start looking at things or cutting back, you know, at least, you know, it's easy to look at the people who like really blow up their lives and be like, well, I'm not that. You know, I didn't get there, so I'm fine. But the thing about alcoholism and drugs and any addiction is that it's very, very gradual. Like, you know, your coworker who got hooked on heroin or something, like that needle didn't go in his arm in a week. You know, it started with, you know, ibuprofen and then painkillers and then, you know, harder stuff. And then, you know, he graduated. Like everything is always a gradual kind of descent into addiction. Yeah, I don't know what I'm trying to say. I'm just kind of rambling.
Do you think people are born with addiction tendencies or is it nature versus nurture? What do you think?
I don't know. That's so mixed. It is, yeah. I mean, you know, on the internet, you can find anything to back up anything. I feel like I have very addictive behavior. I don't know if that's genetic or not. Everyone in my family has that. That could just be how we were all brought up. We were all in these high stress, high anxiety environments. Or it could have been, you know, Grandpa Massimo came over from Italy and he just had the gene. You know, I don't know. But it's not like when I, you know, take the coffee, for example. When I got sober, I went and stayed with my buddy and we got into coffee and I drank, I mean, that became my new thing. I would drink 4 or 5 cups of coffee a day. And that like went very quickly. And then it was it's a lot better for you than alcohol. But, I find myself, it's very easy for me to get, you know, hooked on things.
Yeah.
Whether it's genetic or not, I think a lot of times, I hate to even say this, like it's somewhat of a cop out to blame it on genes. Mm-hmm. Not a doctor. I don't know.
Okay. And then how has your life improved? Like, what are some positives for you of being sober, not drinking in your body, in your mind, in your life?
Yeah. I mean, literally everything. And I don't mean that as like hyperbole or anything. Like everything has gotten better since then. I sleep. That was such a huge thing for me was the sleep. I've been having trouble sleeping for like 10, 15 years. The alcohol, some other drugs I was on, like that all really, initially I took that stuff to fix the sleep, to help the sleep, but then it just destroyed my sleep. And so now I can lay down, my head's clear. I can sleep well. I feel refreshed. I wake up every morning, 5 o'clock, go to the gym. It's just a great way to start the day. Whereas again, 5 years ago, wake up, 3 in the morning, like crazy anxiety, and I would have to drink just to quell that. My head, like my brain just feels better. I retain information better. I feel like I can have a conversation better. I feel like I'm less reactive and less volatile. I can stomach, you know, loss, you know, loss is not the right word, but I can stomach like harder things in life, where in the past it was like, I need to drink, you know, something bad happened at work, or, you know, some guy pissed me off at the grocery, and it was like, I got to drink because of that. And now it's, I don't know. I feel more calm and at peace with those kind of things. My relationships and with you are better. The way we connect and stuff like that, and the way we talk, and the way we are physical with each other. Like I would not have been able to do that if I was drinking or using. And yeah, I mean, I feel like I have more purpose. Like I need to actually like, there's things I want to do rather than like just checking off things, you know, through the day, which is how it felt for a while. Like there were just things that I needed to do until I can check out. And now it's like, I don't even want to check out anymore. You know, you still have ups and downs, you know, but you could just handle it so much better without alcohol. And I didn't really realize how much it was affecting me on a day to day. Even in the times where it wasn't like, I wasn't completely off the rails until I was off it. And it was like, wow, this is what normal feels like. Have more energy. You know, I used to dip in the day and have to take naps and stuff. You know, I'm powering through now. I don't know. I think I'm more social and friendly and happy, healthy. I mean, my looks, you know, I was very bloated and gross.
Yeah. Your puffiness went down.
I probably lost 20 pounds. Yeah. I mean, I think my skin got better. I was worried I was losing my hair for a minute, like when I was drinking and stuff like that. Just everything got better.
Would you say it created space for you spiritually as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it did.
And mindfulness, just like being able to be present.
Yeah.
And be mindful.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah, and the desire to want both of those things too.
Yeah.
You know, the desire to want to, on the spiritual side, like feel connected to a higher power. Mm-hmm. And we always talk about like using the story to help other people, you know, and maybe that's, you know, why I was put here.
Definitely.
And then, yeah, I mean, on the mindfulness side, much more like the ability to actually do it. Like I'm doing this New Year's challenge from this guy like online, and in each day he gives like a different little task to do that you have to like check in on with this app. It's called Spar. It's great. And today was, this kind of sounds,
I wanted you to tell.
Yeah, it's, we had to count to 1,000. So it was, you had to, yeah. So you had to find some place quiet, no distractions, no nothing, and just count to 1,000 and just sit there and count and try and focus on the counting. And I mean, have you ever counted to 1,000 before?
I don't think so.
I probably never counted past 100, you know? And it was brutally hard. Wow. I mean, it felt like, and you lose like count too, like, because you're going and you're like, 324, you know, and, but it was really cool. And at the end, I was like so excited when I got into like the late 900s. I was like, this is really cool, but I would have never been able to do that. No. I wouldn't even get to like 50. Are you kidding?
Well, I don't think you even would have had the desire to do a challenge like that.
I'd be like, this is stupid. Like, yeah.
I'm going to the bar.
It still kind of sounds stupid, but it was like,
you've been excited about it. And it's interesting because it's very simple stuff, but mm-hmm. there's a purpose behind all of it, right?
Yeah.
The first day was what? Sunset.
We had to watch, we watched the sunrise and the first sunrise of the decade, which is like really cool to think about. And then the first sunset, which I kind of missed, but the sunrise was really cool. It was at the end of the United States, you know, in Santa Barbara, watching the sun come up. And it was really cool. And you got to take, like I said, a video of it and stuff. And yeah, it's been a fun, you know, maybe we'll do a podcast like one of these days on like little things like that.
You should do it after the challenge.
Yeah, I'll list them all.
I think it's awesome that you're doing that one to be mindful too. You're just, Nick is very like, if he commits to something, he's pretty good at follow through. Mm-hmm. Like Do you remember when you quit coffee for how many? How long did
like 62 days?
It was like rough. 30 you started with, and then you kept going. But like, yeah. You're pretty committed when you start something. I think you're really good at that.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see how it goes. Well, mm-hmm. Awesome. This was very cool. Thank you for sharing your story
for sure.
And how it's helped you.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, I mean, and do we have like an Instagram page up or anything like that?
Yeah, we have an Instagram.
Yeah. I love talking about this stuff. So if like anyone out there wants to just shoot the shit and talk about drinking, like, or not, or, you know, whatever, like,
or needs help,
or just wants to tell me to F off and my opinions are terrible. Like, yeah, reach out. Because when I was trying to sober up, I didn't connect with AA. I didn't have any friends. And I think if I had, you know, someone that wasn't family, you know, to talk to about it, it would have really helped. You know, it maybe not, but I feel like
that's right. AA like wasn't your avenue.
No, and I get very discouraged by that because I, you know, everyone was like, "Oh, AA's gonna do the trick," and it didn't. But that's not to say it doesn't work. But
no, that's interesting though to talk about because AA is the go-to for people, and you're right. You're not going to discourage anyone if it works for you. But for someone like you who's an anomaly and
you don't even need to be an anomaly. I mean, to think that there's a one-size-fit-all approach to quitting drinking is
foolish.
I mean, there's two options right now, like mainstream options. There's rehab and then there's AA. And if you don't have the money to go to rehab or you don't connect with AA, it's like,
you're screwed.
I guess I'm just going cold turkey. And that's a tough spot to be in.
Yeah, and that's where having an addictions coach or mm-hmm. someone to help you would be beneficial.
Friend,
yeah,
someone at church, anything.
That's awesome.
So
so we're going to do a little segment at the end of every podcast where we do a feeling moment and an action, tangible action.
Which one am I? I'm action, right?
Of course.
Okay. Mine already.
I'm the feminine.
Yeah.
So a feeling moment I would say for this would be to really check in with why you're drinking in the first place. And I would say, you know, when you're in a social situation, if you feel like you need it, take a second to check in with yourself and ask yourself some questions like, what am I afraid of?
Mm-hmm.
What am I afraid is going to happen? And, you know, what do I need right now? And see if you can just pause it for 1 second to just feel and ask yourself those questions. And you can go into the bathroom, you can go anywhere. If you're feeling that need to like, I need a drink right now to either handle this conversation, go on this date, be at this party, whatever it is, if you can check in with yourself, sometimes just pausing and asking yourself some questions like that and getting into that feeling space can provide you some relief of a tangible truth of like what it is you're really looking for, you know, mm-hmm. what it is you're afraid that's going to happen. And then when you face your fear, it starts to dissipate. It's like a knot on your back. When you press it, it hurts, it's uncomfortable, but then it begins to soften mm-hmm. and break up. And it's the same with fear. So if we take a second to just feel into it and for a minute, ask ourselves what it is. And a lot of people are afraid to do that because they're afraid of what they're going to uncover. So I just invite you to be brave and to sit with your emotions and ask yourself some questions and feel into why you're drinking in the first place. If it's to have a good time and you're just neutral about it, awesome. If it's to escape, to hide, to change yourself into someone else, then I encourage you to stop and feel and ask those questions. That's my feeling.
Yeah, I want to elaborate on that. So this is for the people who are drinking to escape. This doesn't apply to just drinking to have a good time. Do the counting. Try and count to, I'm not going to say 1,000, but just 300. Like if you're in what Amanda said, like this headspace of like, I need this right now, just do a little meditation, whatever that looks like, sit there. And, you know, this obviously wouldn't apply if you're at a work function and you need a drink, you know, but if you're at home and it's like, I got to pour this glass of wine to watch this show, or I got to have this beer to watch some sports, just sit with yourself, count to 300 and just see how you feel at the end of that. Like, because what that will do is show you that you have willpower for one, like that you could actually do that. And then like really think like during those 300 seconds, like, do I need this? Do I want this right now? is this really making my life better? Is this serving a purpose? And if at the end of that it does, then go for it. And tell us if you make it to 300. Like, I'm telling you, like, this is so hard. Just sitting there in bed, like, man.
You did it in bed? Like, yeah, when you first woke up?
No, I did it.
Here?
Yeah, oh, okay. Before you came home.
That's so funny. Awesome. Well, thanks, guys, for tuning in today.
And thank you.
And, like always, you can find us at Half and Half Pod on Instagram, at Half and Half Pod. You can also find us on our website.
We're still working on the website. Let me finish it.
It's going to be ready by the time we release this. What's the website?
All right. I got to do this now. So it's halfandhalfpod.com. So we're going to have to figure out how to merge these together. But right now the domain is half and half spelled out pod.com.
Yeah.
And that'll have links to everything. And I think I said I got to put something in the show notes. What was that?
Your glasses.
My glasses.
We'll put a couple of things in the show notes.
Yeah.
We'll put the link to his challenge he's doing too.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone wants to do that.
Uh-huh.
And I'll put some studies on alcohol and the effects on hormones as well for anybody
cool.
who's listening.
All right.
Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye.